The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side. We had a little snafu this week, but we creatively powered on. This week, issue 67, we're talking The Dark Knight, which we're not really sure if that's the appropriate title for this. We talked a lot about the Joker, about Heath Ledger, tangents all over the place. Did Christopher Nolan legitimize the comic book movie genre? Does the ripple effect even extend into the Arrowverse? All that and so much more. So let's head into the store. Or maybe we don't. Oh, come on. John's gonna be pissed. Come on, John, pick up. Pick up.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Flight was delayed. I'm on my way.
All right. Well, I'll stop this.
No. Don't worry about it. Keep it going. What we can do is keep recording, and we'll just do this over the phone until I get there.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do the open as normal, and I'm just going to pretend that I'm coming in the store.
Okay.
Hey, John. My favorite time of week. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Real good. Excited to be back. This is a fun topic today. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I've been looking forward to this, and then I sat down to watch the movie, and we'll get into it. But yeah, I like coming in just talking.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Hey.
You know.
I get it.
Yep. Anything exciting going on?
Yeah, big thunderstorm happening right now. So I got that going for me.
I see you looking up at your ceiling. You're like,
I was looking at the window because it just cracked pretty loud. So if I disappear all of a sudden,
that happened in the last podcast.
You'll know why. Well, yeah, but I didn't go completely dead.
Yeah.
If it just goes away.
Don't worry, John. I'll edit it. If you die, get hit by lightning mid-podcast. Nobody will ever know. It'll just be, yep.
You got a lot of old footage that you can pull from.
It's amazing what you can do with computers nowadays.
Yeah.
Who knows? You might have been gone for a long time now.
I'm purely CG at this point.
Oh, man. All right. Those covers from last week, Inhyuk Lee's.
Yeah, Flash Forward number 6.
Yeah, I was surprised by that one. You said you really, not that I don't like it, I'm just like, that's a different looking cover,
yeah.
And colors too, with that teal color, that bright in there. It's kind of
cool. I liked it. Yeah.
Different. And much like we said last week, two totally different covers.
Yes.
That Captain America, who's the artist on that one?
Jung Yoon.
Good for you.
I think. Yeah.
I don't know. I just have pictures of him now, and
I'm just throwing it out there.
Gwen Stacy has a nice cake, the Captain America shield cake. That's a nice cake.
It's a little bit more anime-ish, the style.
A little bit.
Yeah. I liked it.
But it's a bright and happy picture. That would be a great picture for the 4th of July.
There you go.
Maybe that's what I'll have for my birthday cake when I turn 50, the Captain America shield. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's pretty cool. Oh, look at, I think the inside of it, did you notice it's strawberries?
Oh, no, I don't have it up now.
Yeah, if you zoom in on the picture, it looks like it's like red and white frosting to make the outer stripes, but the inside stripe that's right around the blue,
strawberries.
Blue circle, it's strawberries.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I just noticed that.
A level of detail I did not discover.
Oh, it's amazing what you can do with your iPhone.
Yeah.
And you zoom in. All right. All right. You want to just jump into the movie?
Sure.
All right. Let's play a little trailer from Dark Knight from 2008. And then we'll have our little Bright Side chat.
Thank you. again. A year ago, these cops and lawyers wouldn't dare cross any of you. I mean, what happened?
So what are you proposing?
It's simple. Kill the Batman. Here's my card.
Bruce, this is Harvey Dent.
Rachel's told me everything about you.
I certainly hope not.
You're Alfred, right?
That's right, sir.
Any psychotic ex-boyfriends I should be aware of?
Oh, you have no idea.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
I've seen now what I have to become to stop men like him.
The night is darkest just before the dawn. I promise you, the dawn is coming.
And here we go.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Be wanting the bat putt, sir?
The middle of the day, Alfred? Not very subtle.
The Lamborghini, then.
Much more subtle.
All right, that's an old movie.
Yeah. What's it, 12 years old now?
Isn't that crazy?
Jeez, so, yeah, it seems like I just saw that movie.
And we did.
Well, no. Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you kind of walked right into that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going on a 12-year-old memory here. What did you think?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, no, that was. Do you remember?
Which means
seeing
he's been
it?
Dead for 12. Which means Heath Ledger's been gone for 12 years.
It yeah, he like died in January.
Just yesterday,
he died in January of that year before it came out. So it was.
Yeah, yeah right. It was before the movie came out.
I want to say I read that. It's like is it coming up? I think it's coming up. It's like the 28th or something like that.
Is it? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. And I read a few things on that, especially looking into this movie and stuff. They said it wasn't real. Well, it wasn't necessarily a suicide. He had been suffering from insomnia for years.
Right.
And it was just a bad mixture of whatever he had done that night, you know, like, and it wasn't other drugs. It might have just been alcohol. And his sister had said she had warned him that night, like, you got to be careful with what, you know, taking that. And
right.
And that was the night. It was too bad. Really was too bad.
It was really too shocking.
Bad.
Yeah.
Starting out on a high note here, but you can't ignore
that. I mean, you can't talk about the movie without addressing Heath Ledger. So,
yeah. Getting into that though, didn't it feel like at the time, like, the movie could either completely flop or it could get a boost?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, that was his last movie that was completed.
Right.
I think he had one other that he was in the middle of, but that was his last completed movie.
Yeah. And I don't, like, I'm sure that it actually helped to bolster the performance at the box office because of people going to see it since he had passed. Now, I mean, this was such a good movie that it was going to do well by word of mouth anyways.
Right.
But I'm sure that there was a lot of people that went to see it strictly because he had passed away. And there was a lot of things tied to, you know, at the time there was a lot of rumors swirling around about how, you know, him getting into character caused this depression. You know, there was a lot of stuff that people were saying.
That's where I read that insomnia stuff is that his family was trying to debunk that by saying, no, he wasn't really depressed about it. He did really get into the character, but they were saying that he enjoyed it. He enjoyed his time playing the character, and it was just a bad accident. That's what they're saying. Now, who knows? I mean, you never know.
Well, we don't know that what they're saying is the truth either. But there was a lot of stuff going around that I think contributed to people's curiosity and wanting to see what was so great about this performance that would have caused him to become depressed or whatever it was. Almost to the point where a conspiracy theorist might think that Warner Brothers was stirring up some of those rumors to, you know,
that would
to
be, yeah.
bolster their box office performance. I'm not a conspiracy theorist myself, but, you know.
But you do love a good conspiracy theory.
But I do love a good conspiracy theory, you know. But all that just kind of heightened the publicity of it. So I don't think there was as much of a chance of it being of bombing necessarily. I think it got a very big boost from what happened. Now, I mean, had he not passed away, I still think the movie would have done, you know, it would have done well on its own anyways. But just because of how, like I said, how good it was, it, you know, was impossible to not really do well.
Yeah. Do you think he still would have gotten the Oscar for it?
I don't know, because I feel like these movies get snubbed, you know, for awards a lot of times.
Right.
And I think that he probably would not have got it if he hadn't passed away. It doesn't mean he wasn't deserving of it, because I think the performance was still deserving of it.
Right.
But I think, I think if he hadn't passed away and there wasn't all of that stuff swirling around it, this movie probably would have got snubbed, just like, you know, they always
like
have.
Every movie had always
pretty much
been snubbed. And
yeah.
I like that it, I hate to say I tend to agree with you on that, because I do think his performance stands on its own as an Oscar-worthy performance. But in a year that you have, I don't remember what came out that year, but in any given year, you're up against other Oscar-worthy performances, right?
Right.
So did this push it over the edge for, you know, lock it in for him? Maybe. But when you watch that again, and especially now watching it this many years later, and you just see how good it was. And yes. I haven't watched this movie in its entirety. I haven't watched it in probably a year or two.
Seen again for me, it's probably been 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Since I've watched it.
I've watched scenes in it multiple times every year. Like, I'm talking, you know, dozen. There's scenes,
because
right. there's reference scenes in here that I use for sound when I redo the room and stuff. But
right.
like, you know, when he, the Gatling gun, when he shoots at the bricks.
Right.
And those, when those go off, that's a great base test. It's so much. It's like, boom, when he shoots that gun.
Yeah.
But,
and I'll have to say, because, you know, I did not watch this in 4K or Atmos or anything, because I just have the Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't quite have the reference level sound, but yes, there were a couple of scenes where the bass still really hit.
Yeah.
That being one of them.
The 4K version, you know, we're getting into.
He doesn't do Atmos anyways, right?
No, Nolan doesn't do. He's not a big fan of that.
So the sound probably wasn't.
Yeah.
That much different anyways.
But his sound, and we're getting into Brightside home theater here. But
right.
his sound, Nolan's sound, is some of the best. And it doesn't have to be Atmos to be great.
No, it doesn't. I just didn't know what the difference was on that disc.
Yeah,
but
it's DTS is the DTS, I think, 7.1. So you might have heard the same one if you have the
Blu-ray.
Yeah,
probably did.
I'll tell you, though, the 4K, it looks really, really good. I recommend you picking that up, because.
Well, I will. I'll get the trilogy in 4K eventually.
Yeah.
I just haven't picked it up yet.
That scene, the scene in when he's being like interrogated and stuff, and you can see his eyes, and you see Batman's eyes, and the detail, and just the acting, he did such a good job. And I read a thing on getting ready for the show, and where I read a thing that he was asking Christian Bale to actually hit him in that interrogation scene, because he wanted to be hit so that he could react to it the way somebody that was psychotic would act.
Right.
And then the hospital scene with, was that Aaron Eckhart?
Yeah. Aaron Eckhart, yeah.
And when they were like, they'd say cut, and Heath Ledger would pace around the room acting still like the Joker. And he'd just be licking and walking. And then they go, okay, they come back to action. And I guess there was one part where like Aaron Eckhart like put his hand up and he got like mad at him, like, calm down. And then he grabbed his hand, and that's the scene.
Yeah.
When he's holding his hand, and then they went right into the scene and they did it. And then when they said cut, Heath Ledger looked at Aaron Eckhart and said, that's what acting's all about. He came out of character to say that to him, but he was really getting into it on set. There's a ton of fascinating things on IMDb about him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and I will say, like, I don't know at what point we're going to get into what while we discuss this, but, you know, obviously the biggest comparison is going to be, you know, to Joaquin Phoenix, you know, and we just had the Joker movie,
yes,
which was very good. But here's what I'll say as far as, you know, because there's always – now there's going to be the thing, like, who did it – who wore it better? When I watched Joker, I think Joaquin Phoenix did a great job, but I was aware the entire time that I was watching Joaquin Phoenix playing the Joker. But when I watched this movie, at no point in the movie at all did I see Heath Ledger. It was only the Joker, like for the entire thing. Now, granted, we never saw him without makeup in this movie where we did see Phoenix through a lot of it, but still I was aware that it was an actor playing the Joker in the Joker movie.
Right.
But when I watched this movie, he was the Joker. Like, at no point did I see Heath Ledger at all. Like, he was completely lost in that part.
Yes.
And I think Heath wore it better. You know, I mean, Phoenix did a great job, but having now that this is fresher in my mind again, there's just no doubt that Heath was, like, he just was a better Joker. I really think he was.
I think he epitomized the Joker.
Yeah.
In all incarnations of the Joker, he pretty much epitomized everything in that. And we referenced that. We referenced him a lot before Joker came out, saying, like, we don't want an origin story. And we used that movie because he used a bunch of, he had a bunch of origins.
His story changed every time. Every time he told it.
Every person that he could talk to, he was like, did I tell you where I got these scars? You know, and it's like, so that to us is what the origin of Joker should be. It should be that unknown, that's what made, and this has been rehashed over and over.
Yeah, for sure. So we're not breaking any new ground here, but.
But what I think what Joaquin Phoenix did, it's a different type of character. We weren't supposed to lose ourselves in it like Heath did, but I thought they both did it a really good job. I do like Heath's better.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, I don't want to sound like I didn't like Phoenix's performance, because like I said, I really did like it a lot. But
I think if he wins an Oscar, fresher, I think he deserves it too.
It was also fresher in my mind, obviously, because I'd seen it more recently. But like I said, now having seen it again, I still, haven't seen Dark Knight again, I really think that Heath Ledger did a better Joker.
So what did you think of the laugh? Heath Ledger's laugh. I'd forgotten about it. Like you said, now that it's fresh in my mind, it's like I'd forgotten how good he got that laugh.
I did too. And even a lot of the I had kind of forgotten the lip licking and all that stuff. Like, it just been a while since I've seen it. And I had forgotten some of the tics and some of the mannerisms.
Did you hear where the lip licking came from?
Mm-mm.
So the makeup, the prosthetics they use for his scars, they kept falling down.
Oh, really?
So he kept licking to put him back up. But that wasn't why he was doing it in the movie. He would do that off camera to get it right. But then he was like, wait a minute, I'm going to make this a tick. That's how it evolved into what you see on screen.
Right.
And that's how deep into this role he got. He was like, oh, wait a minute, I could be a psycho like this.
Right.
And it really worked. It was just...
It did really work. It was very...
I loved reading that because everybody references that lick, because it's such a subtle thing, but yet it was still really good.
Yeah, like I said, it really just kind of played into the mania,
of
the character. And like I said, it was really good. And it was new. We still haven't seen it since either, but... You know, we had never seen that with the Joker before. Like, it had never been a thing, even in the comics or, you know, in obviously Jack Nicholson or Cesar Romero never had anything like that. So,
see, I thought it's funny because I thought if you're talking about the Joker, so you go back to Romero, that was kind of campy, of course.
It was.
But it was still, he was still psychotic. If you go back to some of those stories, what he was doing was psychotic. But But then you get into Nicholson and you're getting, I thought he did a real, at the time, that was the best one that we had had.
It was, but he was more a gangster than anything.
Right.
Nicholson's Joker
Jack
was
Napier,
more
the,
yeah, it was yeah. more like a mobster than anything else. Whereas this version, Heath Ledger's version, was the even Cesar Romero. Yes, he was dastardly or whatever, but like
that's the word.
But this is really where you know you got the sense that, like I said, he just wants to see the world burn, and that's it.
And like, he came from nowhere. Because, like you said, it's like Nicholson's Joker came from the underworld. He had, you know, he had a backstory of, you know, trying to rise up in the ranks of the mob,
right?
And, you know, and then his boss screwed him, and that's how he ended up where he was.
Right.
Where this Joker, he just like shows up in the town out of nowhere.
Right. Right. And you don't know where he came from.
Yeah. It was alluded to at the end of Batman Begins when they showed the Joker card. But then we jump right in at the beginning of the movie with him robbing a bank and killing every assistant.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and the thing is, too, it's like, yes, he's got that, obviously, that crazy, you know, just wants to see the world burn kind of thing. But also very calculating and
very
smart.
Very smart, yes.
You know? And it even comes up. There's that one point in there where, you know, one of the other mobsters says, well, you're crazy or whatever. And he's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know,
the only thing
like,
he
I'm
didn't say was
crazy.
My mother had me tested.
Exactly. But it was kind of like, and it almost offended him. He's like, no, I'm not crazy and I'm not stupid. Like, I'm very well aware of what I'm saying and what I'm doing. But then there was also that, like I said, I'll cut my own leg off just to see if I could stand up straight. You know,
right.
It was kind of like that.
Well, he's ready to blow himself up. But at the same time, like you said, with Heath Ledger too, the acting that he did there, he's got his fingers on a, you know, a hand grenade, string to a hand grenade, but they're like, you're crazy. But the look on his face when he goes, I'm not. And then doesn't he say it like again, like out of the side of his eyes, like, I'm not. Like, you know what I mean? It was,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Really
it was
good.
Very
like,
much
like that almost like hurt his feelings.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It was like, he was very offended by that.
Right.
Cause like, he's like, don't dismiss me by saying I'm crazy. Like what I'm saying.
But he was dead on with what he was telling everybody.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm telling you the truth and it's not crazy, but I am crazy enough to blow us all up. So, you know, but it was kind of like, don't discount what I'm saying because you think I'm nuts. Like I'm telling you what you haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
You know,
the television. He referred to the guy, the television and he points to it.
Right. Which was awesome.
Yeah. That was great.
Now, he's crazy when he sets $650 million on fire just to watch it burn.
But
that's a little nuts.
Yeah. One of the other things I read is like Heath Ledger doing the – remember when he clapped in the jail cell when Commissioner Gordon got his promotion? That was off camera. That was supposed to be off camera. That wasn't in the script. That wasn't anything. And the cameras happened to be rolling and he just started clapping like that. And they're like, get that. And they rolled the cameras over to him. Like they fixed the cameras on him because that wasn't supposed
to
be in it. Yeah. And it's like, but that was him being that crazy that, and he's just sitting there. It's like,
well, and you think maybe you would just hear it off camera or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is probably what he was thinking when he did it. Like, oh, well, they'll hear this in the scene or whatever. But yeah, I always like to see what's improvised and what's written, you know, into a script. And usually you don't know, you know, you really never know what to, you know, what
Well, IMDb is great for that stuff. I love reading that, those little things. And a lot of that's in the extras too. I didn't get to get into the extras on this one, but it's that from what I've heard that he did a lot of
improvisation.
There we go. Yeah, he did a lot of improvisation in this one. And to get into his smarts, it's that whole plan that he had of being captured. And then, and that's, I had that in, of course, true DJ and John fashion, we're jumping all over the place here. The standoff in the street.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because yes, he has that whole plan to get captured so he can get to Lau or whatever the guy's name was. But he was also, like, disappointed that Batman didn't run him down and kill him. Like, he would have been just as content if he would have died, you know, and got hit there. So it's like, I have this plan, but again, I don't care. Like, if you just run me down and kill me, right, I'm okay with that too.
But I loved that standoff because that's like the epitome of Batman and Joker. And it's like neither of them want to kill each other.
Right.
You know, and you have that, they, like, he's coming, they're, you know, they're playing chicken, but nobody wants to, you know, they both want to give.
Right.
Or, and Joker's like, come and get, you know, come on, hit me. You know?
Right.
I'm wondering, like, I don't know if he had a plan to be captured, because if you look at that plan, had he not been captured, that guy that got delivered to the cell with the cell phone in
him, with the cell phone,
that still would have happened. And he could have made the call from the outside, blown the guy up, and then gone in and gotten Lau.
So could have, that all
that could have. I thought of that this time viewing it. It's not,
I guess.
Yeah, it's like, so he had it on both sides in that way. I thought. I just. Well, hey, look at me. I'm here now. So let's just keep going.
All right. I don't remember exactly what we were saying, but
I was in the middle of.
Oh, we were talking about the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that plan. I think it. You know, it makes him seem smarter if that plan was for him to be captured, but I'm pretty sure that if you look at it, that whole plan could have taken place without him being captured, because the bomb still goes. All he needed to get the bomb off was a cell phone.
Right.
So it was pretty cool of him getting out of his cell, because if he does, if that doesn't happen,
I think it would have worked either way, like you said. But I mean, they even make a point to reference in the movie, though, that
that was his plan all along.
That was his plan all along. Now they could just be speculating that as well. But yeah, like I said, it probably works either way.
Right.
It's easier though if he's on the inside,
right?
Because he's there. But then, like you said, he still has to figure out a way to get out of his cell and get a cell phone.
Exactly. Exactly. So I just think it's like that. That scene with Gordon saying that was his plan all along is the characters showing their respect for him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. He's a good adversary, blah, blah, blah. I just thought, but then the more I thought about it, I was like, well, wait a minute. If he didn't get captured, he could still call the cell phone, blow the building up, and go in and get Lau himself. So it kind of works out, and it works out in all aspects, in my opinion. I thought the movie was well-grounded for a comic book movie. And the reason I'm saying that now is because it's like with that plan, it's like these are comic book plans. This was my, and that gets it, you know, Joe and I quote, my son and I quote that all the time. It's like, it wasn't part of the plan. It wasn't, you know, I love the way he says that in the movie too. I thought this movie was very well grounded for a comic book movie, for a Batman movie. There are a few scenes that I thought were very comic booky. The explosions when Rachel and Harvey are about to explode, those bombs, the barrels full of explosives, those were Batman 66 type threats. You know what I mean? Like, you're tied to a bunch of barrels and they even had the detonator on top of them. So it was like, I thought that was in that world, in that movie, I thought that was a great nod to that. But I thought the rest of the movie was fairly well grounded. I mean, and we said that when we did Batman Begins. Because
it is. I would say the Nolan trilogy is kind of known for that, as being, you know, it's superhero or characters that are not set up in a superhero world. Like, they're not in the Justice League world.
Right.
Where there's other heroes running around. Like, you know, you feel like Batman is the only one of his kind that's running around out there. You know, there's not a bunch of superheroes. And, you know, with the Joker as well.
Well, it brings some legitimacy to the fact that it's like this could be any billionaire that that has the means, and that, you know, the company that has the government contracts to come up with the Tumblr. So it's, you know what I mean? So it's like, and of course, I'm not saying this is real, but I'm saying, like, it's not, he doesn't have superpowers. So Nolan was able to create this environment that was real, that felt real. And then when you get into, what's his name that did 89?
Tim Burton.
Even his Gotham didn't feel real.
Right.
It felt comic booky, right? Whereas Christopher Nolan's Gotham was Chicago. It feels right. real. It is real. You know, it wasn't called Chicago in the movie, but that's what they used as a backdrop,
right.
which is brings that legitimacy. So I was in Chicago last January for the Winter Classic, and we're driving around. My son and I are driving around, and that's what we were talking about. We're like,
right.
we're like, this is like when we're in Batman. It's like you know these scenes, and you're like. It's grounded in reality.
Well, even to the Batmobile, which we discussed this when we talked about Batman Begins, and you know, you like the Batmobile more than I do, but again, it's a vehicle grounded in reality. Like it's a military right. vehicle, and you could see you might expect to see something like that even today on the not necessarily driving down the freeway, but you know, but like in a military application.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the Batmobiles that I actually tend to prefer, which are more comic booky and look
exactly.
like a Batmobile,
right.
are not vehicles that you would expect to see, you know, out there, you know,
right.
in the world. But you know, all of Batman's tech in these movies, they're military grade equipment that were being tested, and you could see that stuff being tested for the military.
Right.
You know, you could see that Kevlar bodysuit being tested for soldiers and things like that. So they did do a good job of kind of, like you said, grounding it in reality to where, you know, you could, again, with enough money, anybody could do what he was doing in that movie.
Right.
You know, as opposed to
that. That's what I mean. It's like,
yeah.
And most of the environment was realistic.
Right.
I noticed for the first time, so now I know this isn't realistic, but I thought it looked really cool. I never noticed it before. When the tumbler turns into the bat pod, the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Do you know where the two wheels come from? I always thought, like, because he's laying down. I always
right.
thought he was laying on it. And when he comes out, it's the...
No, because it kind of shifted over.
Yeah, it's the front two wheels.
Right.
So when he pulls out of it, the right side wheel, your passenger side front wheel, shifted in behind him.
Right. I noticed that.
It's really cool looking. And I was like,
right.
And that's why it's able to do all, like when he goes under the truck, the thing flattens
right.
out so that he can sit and get under the truck. And
right.
then when he does the little up the wall and falls back down. That was pretty
right.
cool. You know, the thing can shift and stuff, but I'd always thought like it was the left side of the vehicle's wheels and
right.
he just came out from under, you know, the rear wheel came out from under it, but it's the front two wheels. It's pretty cool how it's like the green
yeah.
machine from when we were
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then again, now just to kind of go back a little bit, because I was just thinking about this, but you know, talking about again, kind of being grounded in reality and how any millionaire or not really a billionaire. A millionaire couldn't do what Batman does.
No.
But billionaire could do it. But
could
like
for
you
a
go
week.
To the joke, you go to the Joker too. Because again, in the comics, and even in Tim Burton's Batman, like the Joker is white, like he's bleached white from head to toe because
right.
of a chemical burn. But again, in this movie, and we saw this in Phoenix's movie too, but it's just paint. Like
right.
his arms aren't white. Like it's literally just a guy.
Yeah.
So again, anybody could be the Joker.
Yep.
Right? It's just a guy with clown makeup. His hair's dyed green.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not like chemically white or anything
nope.
like that. So,
you just
I, like
need
you
to
said,
be psychotic and
right.
a will to die.
Exactly. Which I feel like is every third person you meet out on the street. But, you know, again, that was the first
streets.
Time, really the first time we had seen the Joker that way. In movies or film or
right.
cartoons
yeah,
or
yeah.
anything, because, you know, traditionally the origin is that he's white, like he's bleached white from the chemical accident through all the comics, through all the cartoons, through, you know, Tim Burton's, even Cesar Romero's, like,
yeah.
So again, this was Christopher Nolan bringing it to where this could be any two people with the right circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, the right amount of money and the right amount of crazy, and anybody could do this. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool that way.
So, getting back into the, you know, let's delve a little further into the Joker here. I thought of something while I was watching this. I think the Joker, this gets back into their standoff on the street. It gets into all of the movies. Is the Batman story, is it a Batman story? Is it a Joker story? Can either one of them live without the other in any incarnation. My example is, so we have Nolan's trilogy, we have the Tim Burton movies, and then he didn't do all of them. He just did the first two, right?
He did the first two, and then Joel Schumacher did the last two. Oh, that's right.
Schumacher did the last ones.
But only the Joker only appeared in one.
Right.
You know, in Batman.
And then we have,
Oh, not Batman Begins.
Then we have a Joker standalone movie.
Right.
But I would argue that the best Batman movies are the ones with the Joker in them. And then you have a standalone Joker movie.
Right.
You go back to the 89 movies and then 89 or the Tim Burton and then Joel Schumacher movies. I actually think Batman Returns is a better movie. I enjoy, there were more characters. I actually liked that movie a little bit better, but than 89.
Okay.
Than Batman 89. I thought it was a little more entertaining, but I really liked that story. I really liked Nicholson. I liked that joke. That's the iconic one, is the Batman 89. And I think that's because of the Joker. And my point being, the Joker makes Batman as much as Batman makes the Joker.
Of course. It's been that way for years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in any comic, it's referenced more in the comics just because, you know, there's so much more interaction between the two of them. You know, there's been so many more encounters than in the movies, but it's referenced over and over again how one doesn't exist without the other. Like one, they're both two sides of the same coin. You know what I mean?
And well, now
clearly
we're getting into
the Joker, like the Joker's motive has never been to kill Batman.
No.
Even in the comics. Like, he doesn't want to kill Batman. Now, he wants to defeat him and he wants to take him down, but he doesn't want to kill him because he understands that they need each other to.
He's like the Joker's the cat and then Batman's the mouse, and he's just toying with it. He's just batting it around, trying to have some fun with it and terrorize it. The dichotomy is great because anybody else would just kill him.
Right.
And Batman has a code. Batman won't do that.
Batman
so
has a code.
So this goes on and on forever because it will not end, because neither of them will end it for different reasons.
Well, right. But I think to some degree, the Joker needs Batman more than Batman needs the Joker. You know, like the Joker wants Batman around because he's a worthy adversary. Like, he keeps him entertained. Whereas if the Joker ceased to be, Batman would still go on, I think, you know, just fine. Batman will never kill the Joker just because of his code, and he'll just never kill.
Right.
And so he doesn't keep the Joker alive because he thinks he's a worthy adversary.
Well, that's what I mean.
Whereas the Joker, that is the reason why he doesn't want to kill Batman, because he feels like the world is more fun with Batman in it.
Right. And and that's what he says. But that's what I mean. That's what's great about those characters, is that if Joker tried that with anybody else, they would kill him.
Right.
You know, sensibly, that's...
Well, any other character without a code. Like, if the Joker
Superman
went up against if the Joker went up against Frank Castle, you know, Castle's gonna kill him.
That's what I mean.
You know, but I mean, if he went up against even, like, Peter Parker, or if he went up with a character that has a code to not kill, then they're not gonna kill regardless.
Right.
But yeah, if he tried it with, you know, Ghost Rider or Frank Castle or one of those other characters, of course, they'd take him down.
It is pretty interesting that neither of them have superpowers.
Right.
You know, Batman's universe isn't based in superpowers.
No,
it's
and
all
I think that's why they play so well off of each other.
Right.
And because it's not, you always have the Superman versus Lex Luthor thing. And it's like, well, how is Lex really a worthy adversary for Superman?
His superpower is supposed to be his brain.
It's his intellect. And actually, and some of that was played out in the Hell Arisen or whatever that came out today, where Lex Luthor takes down a whole team of powered people very quickly his mind. Yeah, because of his intellect. But yeah, you don't have this such a diverse or such a not diverse but disparity in power level between the Joker and Batman. You know, like, they're just two guys.
Right.
You know? I mean, Batman is obviously much better trained in fighting style than the Joker is, but the Joker's a wild card. Like, you just don't know what he's going to do and where he's going to come from. Like, how do you prepare for that? How do you prepare to fight crazy? You know, it's just like, you know, there's no prescribed style that he's going to adhere to. So
right.
you can't figure him out. But at the core, it's just two guys, and it's just one guy punching another guy. Like, intellect or not, if Superman punches Lex Luthor in the face, like, that's game over. You know what I mean? Like, that's the end of the,
like
end
in
of
the
story.
The Tom Welling.
Yeah.
In the crossover.
Right.
Still stronger.
Still stronger. So, you know, intellect aside, you know, I'm Superman. I'm faster than you and I'm stronger than you.
Right.
And if I come at you, you know, I'm going to get you. Whereas with Joker and Batman, it's just who has the better toys and who's,
yeah,
you know, who's going to do what. Like, you know, again, even in this movie, like, Batman
but
is
that,
just laying into the Joker. Like, he is just beating the tar out of him, but he's not getting anywhere, right? Because, again, how do you
care.
Fight crazy,
you can't
right?
Fight
he just
crazy.
Doesn't care. I don't feel the pain, you know?
It's kind of like... That's what I liked about this, about Heath Ledger going to, like, Nicholson. Like, you mentioned the toys. Heath Ledger never was in awe of Batman. He was never in awe of the toys. He was, you know what I mean? He didn't have that. And it's like, that's why I thought it was like, if you just look at like Romero to Nicholson to Ledger, you have a nice progression away from the, like, you feel like Romero was a little bit more with the toys.
Right.
And then Nicholson was gangster, but a nod to the toys, and now
well,
we're.
Well, he even says it. He
that's
specifically
what I mean.
Says, where does he get those wonderful toys?
Right, and that's why I thought that was just a nod, but he was still a gangster. And,
right.
But in this one here, he's just full on nut job. And like I said earlier, he wanted to be punched by Christian Bale so that he would know what that was like and still react the way a psychotic person would. But yeah, that he never mentioned the toys. He wasn't in awe of Batman. He. You know, using his intellect to manipulate, well, basically everybody.
You know, the other thing with his intellect, too, it's like, you know, he had this plan, but it also, like, was very fluid. Because, you know, at one point he sets Rachel and Harvey up, right? And he tells Batman, you know, you can only save one of them.
Right, right.
And he knows who he's going to go after.
Yeah.
And that's why he reverses the addresses and sends them to the wrong place. But
that's awesome.
He doesn't know what's going to happen to Harvey. Like, he can't predict that Harvey's going to burn half of his face off or whatever.
He's going to lay on his face in the...
Right. So that's something that happens. But then once it happens, he immediately figures out a way to use that.
Yeah, to manipulate
because then
the
his
situation.
Plan, right. Yep. Then his plan switches and he's like, whoa, well, the biggest blow to Gotham is going to be to take down its brightest star, which was Harvey Dent. But if Harvey had died and Rachel had survived, that's a whole different plan there. So
right.
Even though it seems like he has this plan and it's well thought out, there's a lot of improvisation that ends up happening there too, because things changed and he was able to roll with it and develop another master plan kind of on the fly. He's like, oh, well, I'm going to do this. It's kind of like choose your own adventure. Like, you have a flow chart, and it's like, if Rachel survives, you go here, here, and here.
Right.
If Harvey survives, you go here, here, and here, and...
But I think that was his, kind of like his message of the movie was, like, he's a quote-unquote agent of chaos.
Right.
He doesn't have a plan. And that's why when we get into that part, like, when Commissioner Gordon says that was his plan all along when he blew up the building, and it's like, no, maybe it wasn't. His plan might have, but he reacted to the situation. Oh, I got captured. Okay, now I got to find a way out of this cell so I can get a cell phone and get that guy to blow up so we can get out of here. So, but then he gets into the conversation with Harvey Dent and that whole conversation, like, you know, it's like if everybody was, you know, it didn't go according to plan and everybody gets upset. And it's like, that's the idea. He doesn't like plans. He doesn't go by a plan. It's just, you know, like, whatever happens. It's like, and when Harvey's flipping the coin, and he's like, heads, you live. Tails, you die. And he's like, now we're talking. Whatever he said. You know, he's in for it. He's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. I'm down.
And that's why I was saying earlier, when the standoff on the street, it's like he's...
Yeah.
I think he does have a plan, at least the framework of a plan.
Right, but he can
he's
react.
Also, he also reacts. Like, he's still... Perfectly prepared or very willing to die and just let and end his plan right there. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what I mean. It's like, he's like, I don't have to see it through. Like, if I get to see the end of the plan, that's great. If you blow me away, that's fine too. You know, I just don't really care, you know?
Yep.
And I think that's what, again, that's what makes him such a frightening character. Because, like, how do you reason with that?
Right.
You
know, there's that's what Alfred
like,
was trying to
he's
say.
He's willing to die. Like, he's, right. That's what Alfred's saying with the guy, like,
just wants
you know,
to
with
watch
the jewels in the bush, right.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no reasoning with that. Kind of crazy. You know, there's, because he doesn't care if he lives to see the end of his plan or not.
Right.
You know? And he's not really, there's no end game. Like, he's not really after anything. Like, he's not after a big pile of money, or he's not after, like, he's literally, it's just chaos. Like you said, he's just, how much chaos can I sow in my lifetime? And that's it. Like, there's no grand plan, like, I want to become the richest guy, or I want to become this or that, because he had all the money in the world, and he set it on fire.
Right. Well, even the opening scene, when he robs the bank, he's not doing it for the money.
Right.
He's doing it to piss off the mob guys.
Right.
And it's like, and that's it. It's like, because then when he comes out, he goes, do you, you know, what's his name comes out and he's like, do you know whose bank this is? Yeah, that's why he's doing it. It's like, you know, he's doing it to get everybody's attention. He wants to create chaos. Right. He's trying to create chaos from both sides. You know, this is called The Dark Knight, but it really is. It's a Joker movie. Just like in 89.
Yeah,
everybody
we haven't talked about Batman at all, really.
No, no, like, but that's what I mean. It's such a compelling character, but it isn't a compelling character without Batman.
No.
And, you know, I mean, we had the movie Joker, but as we said before, when they were saying, oh, well, you know, they think that movie would have been good without, if it wasn't, had no ties to Batman. It's like, yeah, it would have been, but it wouldn't have had the same success. If it was just, you know, Arthur Fleck.
No, it was definitely the IP driven because he was Batman related. But there is, like, in that movie, the Joker does exist without Batman. You know what I mean? Like, Batman is not, like, he's not motivated at all by Batman in that movie. Now, does he become later on? Because we don't know what's going to happen with a sequel or
right,
or
but Batman was Batman without Joker as well. The characters were they weren't born together.
Right.
They were born on their own, and then they met in the comics, in the movies, whatever you want to call it. But they absolutely need each. And even the movie Joker needs to have that Batman in the background, because if it's not, it's just another crazy person, and it's not as compelling. It's that, as much as my wife liked the movie because she deals with people all the time, she's a therapist or whatever, but most of the people going to see that movie are looking at it from, like, the Joker point of view, like, yep, that's how the Joker would act. Mm-hmm. That's that guy. And that's that compelling character that...
Well, right, but that's our viewership. Like, that's us ascribing Batman to that character because we know it's like... Burgers and fries, or what, like, it's always Batman and the Joker. Like, we put those together. But in the movie itself, like, Arthur Fleck, that character is not motivated or driven at all. Like, if Batman never exists in that world, that character doesn't change. Like, he doesn't need Batman. We need Batman as viewers because we want to put them together. You know what I mean? But, like, in that movie itself, like, if Batman never shows up in that movie, that character doesn't need him to be there. He's doing what he's doing without Batman's involvement, you know? I think that's us putting it together. And we're saying we liked the movie because we know he's the Joker. But character-wise, in that world, that Joker doesn't need a Batman to function. But, like, in the Heath Ledger world, they're together. So we say that one doesn't exist without the other. And Heath Ledger's Joker is very much motivated by Batman being present.
Right.
I mean, I think they're a little bit different that way, but...
Let me put it this... Let me go off on this little bit of a tangent here. Wouldn't you say that Phoenix's Joker was tormented through that entire movie? He was in pain. He didn't know where his... He didn't know who his father was. He had a rough relationship with his mother. He's making up the relationship that he had with his neighbor down the hall. It was a very, very tormented character.
I agree.
That at times you felt for. Like, remember people, I remember you and I had the conversation and you're like, how do you not feel for him? I'm like, 'cause I know he's a Joker.
Right.
Right?
But so, again, if the movie was just called Arthur...
No, I know that.
Wouldn't you have felt for that guy?
Right. But what I'm saying... Yes, and I said that, but he wasn't. He was Joker. But right. that's not where I'm going with this. The movie's called Joker, okay? Wouldn't you say that the Heath Ledger character is a more engaging, seemed like a happier character? Like, he's enjoying... He's in his world. He's in his element dealing with Batman.
I do think so.
Okay? So, that gets to my point. Batman needs Joker. Joker needs Batman. The movie Joker is the Joker without Batman. And he's tormented. He has no outlet. When he finds Batman, that... And he says it, Heath Ledger says it, you complete me. And in Joker, he's tormented because he's not completed.
Well, I think his torment stems from the lies that his mother told him.
Right.
His mother tormented him.
Right. And like most people have an outlet. If you're tormented, you have an issue, you find an outlet. And his outlet is Batman. He hasn't found that yet, at least not in the movie Joker. But you see where I'm going? I mean, this is all made up, so who knows?
Right, and I do. I mean, I get what you're saying, but again, in Phoenix's world, I think his outlet was, killing the people he killed and becoming that icon that he became.
Right.
Like, I think towards the end, I think at the end of that movie, he wasn't tormented. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, but can't you see him finding Batman and then being like, wow, I don't want to kill, I just want to play with him. This is what I want. And you could see that character not being tormented when he finally does find Batman and he becomes the Heath Ledger character. You know what I mean? It's like, so that's all I'm saying. It's like, I could, that's how you could see, like, you know, as crazy as that guy is, the character Joker.
Yeah.
He's, you know, without Batman, Heath Ledger said it. Heath Ledger's character literally said, you complete me. I know they were making fun of Jerry Maguire, but it's like, that was the line. He's like, I'm not going to kill you. You complete me. I need you. We're having fun.
Right.
And that's the fun that Phoenix's character needs to complete him. And like you said, at the end, he was having a good time. He's enjoying himself. He's losing his mind. That's his world. The world of chaos is what he wants to create. Now he needs a foe, and, you know, that's what completes him. The title was The Dark Knight, right?
Yes. Yeah. Why?
Because we keep talking
Joker?
Are you
being facetious? Yeah.
No.
Well, that's why I said earlier, like, we haven't talked about Batman really at all, and, you know, I mean, Batman does show up in this movie.
Yep.
He plays a part.
It's a nice cameo.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, this is ultimately... Yeah.
Let's get into a little bit of, like, I thought Christian Bale was awesome. He's in all three, so he was really good. I thought Aaron Eckhart, I thought he played a great, especially once he became Harvey.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger overshadowed everybody. And there are some great performances in here by Oscar-winning actors.
I'll say, yeah, Michael Caine did a great job in this movie also.
Gary Oldman. Was
yep
really good. I mean, the entire thing. There was I can't remember.
Well,
what
I mean, again,
this
is a hell of a cast. You know, you got Morgan Freeman, Gary Oldman, Michael Caine. I mean, you got some pretty high powered actors here in this.
Yeah,
movie.
We went over all that when we did Batman Begins. It's like all the Oscar winners.
Yeah,
but that's what I mean. But like Aaron Eckhart, I thought as Harvey at the end, especially when he had to play those and the way he was yelling and doing that with that. I know it was green screen. It was his Two-Face side was all CGI, which that looked fantastic. They did
right.
A really
they did
good
a pretty
job
good job. I mean, there was a couple of moments where when you just see his good side, you can see like the outline of
right.
It was kind of like traced where
yeah.
There was a couple of scenes where it kind of stood out to me that it didn't look real, quote unquote.
Right.
Real. But I mean, for the most part, it actually looked really good. Like, they did a pretty good job with it. And yeah, he was great also. Like, I think he was a great Two-Face. His evolution throughout the movie was really good.
Yeah. I mean, you get the foreshadowing of, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain, which was, obviously you see him sitting at the table, that's, what's coming.
Well, right, and you know it's Harvey Dent. Again, if you know the characters at all, yeah, you kind of know, you know, you kind of know what's going to happen. But yeah, it, you know, and it, again, it's a shame that we love to kill our villains off in these movies. Now, again, this was a trilogy, and Christopher Nolan probably wasn't going to revisit Two-Face anyways. You know, again, I would have loved to see more of that character.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, in the narrative that he was telling, he had to die. You know, otherwise, you know, you don't get the whole thing with Batman at the end of the movie.
I thought it was interesting, and this goes back to 2008 when I first saw it, and Heath Ledger falls off the edge. One, when you see this movie, you knew Heath Ledger was already dead.
Right.
Right? And two, in 89, Batman had died, Joker had died the same exact way. He went over the edge of the building and fell to his death, right? And when I saw it in 89, I was like, Joker's dead?
Yeah.
Joker's not dead. Joker doesn't die. Yeah. What happened? And it, so in this one, where Heath Ledger, the actor is dead.
Dead, right.
You're like, oh, okay, so they're going to, he's going the same way as in 89. And then he saved him, and you were like, oh, that was a nice surprise back in 2008. Yeah. I was like, oh, all right, he's still alive, even though Heath Ledger isn't.
Heath Ledger's right.
You're like, that's too bad. But, I mean, it, and that scene at the end when he saved him was really good, too. It's like, you know, that psychotic scene and him dangling there. It's, I mean, there was just so much to this movie that, like I said, so much to this Joker character was really brought out of this movie.
Right.
That's why he won the Oscar. I mean, yes, he, you know, we started off by saying that maybe it nudged him a little with, you know, being a posthumous award.
Right.
But credibility to his Oscar.
His performance warranted it for sure. Like you said, and you know, we hashed it out again. There's no reason to take it up, bring it up again. But like you said, if he hadn't died, I don't know that he would have been recognized.
Right.
But I think his performance was, it just like I think Phoenix's performance warrants it. If he wins, it's definitely warranted. And he didn't die. So, I mean,
at least not yet.
Not yet. But I mean, yeah, I think the performance was there for sure. I just don't know that back in 2008, it would have got recognized, you know.
If Phoenix goes, well, he's already been nominated.
Right.
If Phoenix was to go on and win it, does that make you look at the character like, and I said this when we talked Joker, when the movie came out, it's like, it's almost like that character is like, I don't want to say it's easy. It's not, but it lends itself to an Oscar performance because there's so much to it. You have to go so deep into that.
But then look at Jared Leto.
That's what I was just going to say. Jared Leto.
You could try so hard that you're either, like I said,
I don't want to use the line from Tropic Thunder because you can't go full.
but the thing is you have to commit to the role. Like the Joker is a character that you have to make a choice with. So your choice can either go really well or it could go very badly. Like I think, in Jared Leto's choice, and I don't know how much of it was his choice and how much of it was written for him, but his take was not it was bad. I like Jared Leto.
I actually thought his take could have been. I thought it was fine. It just didn't get fleshed out.
Well, right.
He had barely any screen time. It's like,
but like, I don't think that the Joker, like, kind of what you were alluding to a minute ago, is like a guaranteed key to Oscar winning.
No,
because the next person that does it,
yeah,
right. The next person that does it could just completely swing and miss. But the character does present the opportunity to put in this great performance if you can find a take.
Because now you have to give a good performance. You have to give a performance.
But now I think the problem becomes for the next guy, what do I do to what do I bring now? Like Heath Ledger brought what he brought.
Well, what's
Phoenix
funny,
brought something a little different, but still reminiscent of Heath Ledger.
Right. But if you remember before The Dark Knight came out, people were wondering if Ledger would be able to live up to Nicholson's.
Well, right.
And he blew it out of the water.
And I wouldn't say Phoenix blew it out of the water compared to Heath Ledger, but he also did a great job.
Yes.
But I'm saying he matched it.
The
next person that gets cast, there's almost like a, maybe I'm a little hesitant to take on this role now because what am I going to bring to it that's going to be different? Like, it's going to take a pretty high caliber performance to overshadow either one of these two. Even to the point where a lot of people were saying with Joaquin Phoenix, is he going to be able to live up to what Heath Ledger did?
Exactly.
And he did. But again, now what's the...
But now you have two to...
Right, exactly.
I really say Nicholson is... Nobody really looks at that anymore. I mean, they love the role, but...
Right, for the time... But he felt like he was still Jack Nicholson playing the Joker. Like, he didn't... Right. He didn't lose himself in the character necessarily. He played crazy Jack Nicholson, just like, you know.
Yeah, he played Jack...
he played Jack Nicholson. But... Right. Whereas Heath and Joaquin definitely... lost themselves in the part. And, you know, like you said, does the Joker equal success? It can, because, you know, again, and I know you were going to bring this up at some point, look at the nominations that both of these movies got. Like, they're the two highest nominated comic book movies ever. With both of them with 11, right? So, and coincidentally, they both have the Joker in them. So, I think because you have to play that character so over the top, if you do it well, then you're going to be you're going to have all these awards thrown at you.
Well, it makes for a compelling story,
right?
You get a compelling story there, and that gets people noticing it. And that, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's how Oscars work, right?
Well, right, <It's> like, right.
You want to be noticed,
but I feel like the next guy is going to have something. Is going to have something special, you know? That
Yeah,
and it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be hard, to match again.
Yeah,
you don't want to just do what Phoenix did, or because again, you could come out and just do what they did and probably be okay. But
you
if
know
you want to
be interesting,
if you want to stand out as being something different,
what if? What do you think of this idea, though? I know we're talking Dark Knight here, but we're talking it's kind of devolved or whatever into Joker talk.
Right.
But what do you think of? What if Phoenix ends up doing a sequel? That'll be the first Joker sequel. And can he match it? Because so far, they've all been one-offs.
Right. Well and there's even, I just read another rumor, which again, they're rumors.
Ooh, breaking news?
Well, the rumor is that he'll appear in Matt Reeves' trilogy.
Phoenix?
Yeah. I was just reading that between shows. Now, again, it's all rumors, so who knows?
Wow.
I don't know how that works.
Like that. Yeah.
I don't know how it would work because again,
he's older.
The age difference based on the Batman that we saw being born in the Joker movie, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how that would work, but I just read that rumor that he might appear in that trilogy. So yeah, I don't know if he has to reprise the role a second time, if he can bring the magic back another time. You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah. All right, let's step away from the Joker for a minute. So what do you think of the idea that this movie set the standard for comic book movies moving forward? We kind of talked about it when we did Batman Begins, but this one came out in 2008. It came out after Iron Man, like a month after or 2 months after, because Iron Man came out in May. This came out in July. I really feel like this whole trilogy is kind of what it legitimized comic book movies.
Say it gave it some legitimacy, but I don't know how much, because again, you say Iron Man came out in, you know, the same year in 2008, but it was probably in concept and development at the same time Batman Begins was coming out. So I don't know how much this trilogy of movies influenced what Jon Favreau did on Iron Man, you know, because
I think
you
would have. Batman Begins came out, what, in 06?
06, right. But Iron Man was probably in its early concept stages at that point. And I don't think its development was altered necessarily by anything, you know, Christopher Nolan did. So I don't know if it necessarily changed or shaped anything that happened with the MCU, which everybody now would say is the standard for comic book movies and universes.
So Batman Begins came out in 05.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is it's not necessarily that it changed. And I actually think that in 05, it probably did influence Favreau a little bit because if you think of all comic book movies, including like Superman Returns, which came out in 06, you think of all the Hulk movies, you think of Daredevil, you think of the X-Men movies, they were all
But none
less
of them
grounded.
Were treated serious. Right. None of them right. were treated as a serious movie right. until the Nolan trilogy
right.
came out.
But my point wasn't necessarily that Favreau was influenced, while, but then looking at 05, maybe he was. But I still wouldn't say that Iron Man was 100% grounded, but it was still more grounded than like a Daredevil was, or even right. the X-Men's or stuff. You know, because basically Iron Man is Batman, just more colorful. It's a rich guy tech superhero. But what I'm saying is the general public.
Well, right. I think
we the consumer took these movies more seriously.
Right. Like, I think this was the first time you could look at them and say this is a movie made for grown-ups, as
yes.
opposed to the
yes.
other ones basically all being
it.
Made for kids. So it like you said, it legitimized the genre as something that could be taken seriously. And then the Marvel movies came along and just kind of furthered that. But if you go back and look at the other movies, they were regarded as kids' movies. You know, comic
yeah.
books were something for kids and not for
yeah.
grown-ups. Now, that being said, even looking at Tim Burton's Batman, like, I don't necessarily view that as a kids' movie. You know, it was pretty dark.
No, but it was
know,
more campy.
But it wasn't, right, but it wasn't treated as a serious movie either.
Right.
Whereas Dark Batman, well, because again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, where like these were the
not
first
as grounded.
Time,
yeah.
right, that these movies were grounded in quote unquote reality. Like
well,
you don't look at Tim Burton's Batman and say, oh, well, I could do that if I had enough money. But you look at Christian Bale's Batman and say, well, with enough training and enough money, I could do that. You know,
right.
So that's where I think the difference comes in. It made him more respectable than it, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
Even going past that, looking at all the MCU movies and all the money they make, and everything is great about them. I love them all, but I don't feel like they're grounded or serious movies like the Dark Knight trilogy is.
Right.
And I don't even think the stuff that I don't think any of the DC stuff that came afterwards is grounded or serious. Like that trilogy.
No,
is.
Because then you're getting into like metahumans.
Right.
And it's tougher to be grounded and serious when you're talking
right.
about like a Wonder Woman or a Superman
right. Right. Exactly.
Flash. And it's like, I mean, the CW does the best they can.
Right.
But by integrating it, it's still, once you get into that whole superhero part, it's tough not to be
right.
as campy and comic booky. But you have, I mean, and that's what was nice when Arrow first started.
Right, because when it was alone, it was
like
there
Batman.
Was no metahumans, right? It was
yeah.
like Batman. Even his villains, he wasn't fighting superpowered villains or anything like
yeah.
that. So, again, it was a thing where, well, if I had enough money and I could learn how to shoot arrows, well, I could be this guy too.
Right.
You know?
When Arrow first came out, I loved Green Arrow growing up because like, I love archery. I love
right.
bows, you know. So when that show came out, that was like announced a year before it came out. I couldn't
right.
wait for that show to show up. When I watched that like the premiere night, and I was honestly a lot of me was disappointed. Because if you go back and you watch that early season, and it's really good, but it's just a mirror image of the Nolan trilogy.
Right.
It's like, I mean, Ra's al Ghul. It's like
right.
you have his training. He goes away and he does some training for 5 years,
right.
which is Batman was gone for 7 years. It's
right.
like, it was
But even in the comics, it was the same. He was always the other Bruce Wayne.
I know that, but I just,
yeah.
I wanted something different. And it was,
right.
I mean, it was so close to it too.
Right.
I was just like, it was, what did that one, 8 years, in 12? I think that season
yeah.
started. So it was only 4 years after Dark
right.
Knight, and I mean, literally, I think, when did Dark Knight Rises come out? I think that
well,
was 12.
Well, it would have been 2010 or 2011, probably.
I think that was 12. I think
was
it was. I think there was a little bit of a
was
gap.
There a 4
in there.
Years gap between
yep.
those?
Yeah, 2012, it says.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so that came out the same year. You know what I'm just saying? It's like,
yeah, right.
I was a little disappointed,
I
but yeah. I stuck it through because I really liked the Green Arrow. And I like what they did where they called it Arrow and everything. But
right.
it was very much like the Christopher Nolan trilogy.
Right.
And that's fine. But I was, I I wanted a little something different because I thought it was too on the nose. But obviously it all worked out.
Right.
It's, you know, you got through it. But that's what I'm saying about this Christopher Nolan. I think it had a huge effect on one inspiration. Like you said, maybe not. Maybe it influenced Favreau. But I think it had a huge effect on the population and right. what the potential for comic book movies going forward. And right. this to me is the best of the three, The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
The best of the three.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So we did our ranking already, so we didn't forget to do that.
Right. Well, and I was going to say this, and, you know, this is a tough thing to throw around, but I watched it again, and, you know, this is a perfect movie. Like, I can't find fault in this movie anywhere. Like, I watched it again last night. Like, well, what am I going to bring up?
You love your
faults. I was going to say, what am I going to bring up that bugged me?
That was convenient.
Well, I'll tell you, there is one small thing that bugged me.
Oh, I knew you couldn't make it.
So I guess no. It's not a perfect movie, but it doesn't have anything to do with the plot, though. Like, when we first meet Batman in the garage in the beginning of this movie, and he, you know, interacts with his bat squad there or whatever, he grabs a rifle by the muzzle, and he bends it down like Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, How does he do that?
Oh, yeah. I have an answer for it. He has the gadget on his arm. It's a hydraulic metal. Okay. It's the same thing that he digs into the side of the van with.
Oh, okay. Because I was like,
you can hear the hydraulics doing the bend.
I didn't hear. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, that was the only thing that bugged me a little bit. I was like, he's not Superman strong. Like,
No.
You can train all you want. You still can't bend steel.
Yeah.
But that was literally the only thing. Now, there's another part that I didn't understand. But I don't find it, like, I didn't understand the whole bullet, getting the fingerprint off the bullet by shooting the bullets into the bricks. Like, I didn't get that whole sequence, but I don't fault it for being wrong
right.
because I believe the science, I just don't really understand it. But like I said, this is a perfect, like, I can't find fault in this movie
anywhere.
So what
he did, let me try to explain the bullet one, which is pretty cool. I don't think it would work, but what he did was, so remember he saw the bullet in the wall.
Right, and he cuts the brick out and takes it with him.
Takes him with him. So now he has that bullet hole.
Gordon just lets him take that evidence, you know, but
right.
that's neither
but
here nor there.
The bullet's gone.
Right.
So he takes the bullet hole, and now what he does is he takes that same gun and the caliber and the bullet,
right.
and he shoots it. And he finds the hole that matches it close.
Well, I got that.
He casts a new bullet out of that and puts it into the other one. And then the computer takes it and says, now this is where the prints would have been, because the residue from the print would have been inside the hole and blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah. And it's, you know, bat tech. But that's the stuff but that's what it gets into. And I know you went, yeah, but just like you wouldn't set up a bunch of bombs with a bunch of barrels. It's like,
No, I'm not,
you know,
saying
I mean?
It was faulty. I just didn't understand it.
But
like,
that's what I liked about, like, they took in comic book situations, like Batman's brains and detective work, and they actually put that into a reality story and tried to base it in some kind of grounded reality. Like, oh, if you did it this way, maybe you could get that. And you can make up a plausible explanation for why he did that. And that was kind of, I thought, like, that's the stuff that I think is cool. It's like, there was another one too that I thought was the computer at the end.
Yeah.
The sonar computer that took all the cell phones from all over Gotham.
Right.
And they put them all in it, and Lucius could see what everybody was listening to.
Right.
That's like a based in reality. Like, that could literally happen, because we think Big Brother is doing that. But yet in a comic book, that's a Batman comic book thing where he
right.
takes everybody's cell phone and is able to triangulate on, because of, like, if he just speaks, it'll know, all the cell phones will hear it in some capacity, you know, the ones near it, and you'll be able to figure out where the Joker is.
Right.
That's insane.
It's insane.
But it's like,
now,
but isn't that so much fun that they took something like you can't do, but that's so comic booky, but yet they made it seem like it's so possible.
Well, they did. Now, here, again, I say it's perfect. Something that bugged me about that is that he got the idea from Lucius in Japan, in China, right?
Yeah.
Because he had it on his little cell phone. But then he built that thing in like a week.
No, he didn't. He had his team do it. Remember, they did it.
Well, right. But what I'm saying is, but they did it like that fast. It's like, he's like, I just found out about this 3 days ago in China and I already have this machine built. It's kind of like, that seemed a little like, maybe he could do that, but it would have taken him a lot longer to get that thing up in place than 3 days, you know? But yeah, that whole thing was, again, like you said, it probably couldn't be done, but in the sense of that movie, it seemed
plausible.
It seemed plausible.
But it's such a Batman thing. And like, my favorite's the barrels. The barrels where the explosion was just, that was the best because that was just.
Well, that's more like a Rocky and Bullwinkle thing, like getting tied onto the train tracks. Yeah.
or push a lever for the TNT.
Right.
It's like, I mean, in this movie, in that, especially the way it's shot in that dark, high contrast look, it's like, it just looked so good. It was just so much fun that you're like, and then on top of that, add in Heath Ledger's performance. Right. And that to me is just, that's what brings everything that gives it that sense of reality that a person could actually act that way.
Right.
People would react that way. And it's just really good. And then the thing I wanted to wrap up with was like the ending in that Gordon, when he's doing the voiceover at the end.
Right.
And he's talking to his son. I think, was it him that did the voiceover? I think he does the voiceover at the end when he turns Harvey's face when Harvey's dead.
Right.
And he turns it from the two face and he goes, he does the, you either live long, and you flip the face over. But then he also says, it's like, sometimes, what's the quote? Oh, he says, sometimes truth isn't always good enough. Sometimes people deserve more. Like you hear that voiceover while Alfred is burning the letter.
Yeah.
Like, the truth isn't good enough. He doesn't need to know that she wasn't coming back.
Right.
Let him live, you know what I mean? So you have that message going on.
Right, like, let him.
You don't need to know the actual truth. You deserve better.
Right.
Like, let him live on that she was coming to, because he believes that she was coming back to him.
And he doesn't need to know.
But then, obviously I'm not doing it justice here, but the same voiceover, he says, and people deserve to have their faith rewarded. Now, this is Commissioner Gordon talking about the public and talking about what you need to go through with what the city's going to go through with Harvey and everything.
Right.
But the image that they show on the screen was Lucius typing his name in and his faith is rewarded because the computer destroys itself.
Right.
You know, because he had said, he goes, he doesn't want any part of this. But his faith was rewarded that Batman knows, or
it's
Bruce
a one,
Wayne
right,
knew.
This was a one-time deal.
It was a one-time deal. But even that, he didn't tell him that. He didn't have to tell him that. He just said, like, Lucius, just put your, just
when you're
please
done,
do
put
this
your,
for me. Put your name in it. Because I knew before you even got here that this is a one-time thing.
Right.
And I thought
and that
you
was, were going to have a problem with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool that they were talking about the city, but at the same time, they were talking about the characters.
Right.
And that it was a cool way to end it. And, it sets you up for the next one. But in my opinion, it almost felt like this movie was like, we need to do a Joker movie. Because the first one, you have two bookends and then you have a Joker story in the middle.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, again, the third one doesn't stand up to this one. Like, this is it.
No.
And not that it's a bad movie, but I think the third one is the worst of the three. Spoiler alert to when we get ahead and do that one in our rankings. But, the third one is definitely the weakest of the trilogy. And this was such a hard act to follow anyways, but.
Right.
But yeah, I almost don't view them in the same continuity. You know what I mean? It just feels like they were very
different.
That's what
I mean.
Yeah.
I feel like the third one's a sequel to the first one. And this one was just like a standalone. That was just a really good standalone.
Right.
It really has the only tie into the first one is
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, Cillian Murphy
was right at the beginning. Yeah.
And he's actually the only one that's in all three as a villain.
As a villain.
Yeah.
Although, again, in this movie, I argue that is he a villain at all? Because he was actually part of the Bat Squad Like, he thought he was actually out there helping to do good with the Batman
dudes. No, no, no. He was a bad guy. He just put him in the wall with all the he wrapped the Bat Squad up. But he was with the gang of people at the beginning. And then the Bat Squad were trying to stop him. Then Batman just wrapped them all up and put them on the same wall.
Okay.
Like, I love that line, too. What, why are you so different than us?
I'm not wearing hockey,
hockey pads.
Yeah.
And then the guy just looked at himself like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I am.
All right. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't think so.
No. I just have one last thing. The scene when he blew up the hospital.
Yeah.
You've heard the story that the detonation didn't go off on time.
In the movie or in the...
When they were filming the movie and he came, Heath Ledger comes out and he like clicks the button.
Right.
And the whole hospital is supposed to blow up around him.
Okay.
And only part of the explosions went off. And Heath Ledger stayed in character.
He improvised that.
And improvised the, like, messing with the detonator and, like, clicking it and stuff. And then all of a sudden it went off and it literally scared him.
Oh, okay.
Like, he was like, whoa! And then he just jumped and got back in and jumped and ran and got into the back of the bus.
Right.
But he, like, watch that scene again knowing that, and it's so cool to see because he walks back towards it, and then he does, like, a little spin around, only, like, a step. Like, he's not in danger.
Well, right,
or anything. But he...
I thought that was all script. It looked like it was scripted.
No, yeah. It wasn't. It was, like, it was all... He was supposed to push the button, and as he's walking to the bus, the whole hospital's supposed to collapse behind him.
Right.
And it didn't. And he stopped and was like, what's going on here? And he just stayed with it. So, like... I got to imagine that he was, like, joking about it. Like, he thought, like, maybe something went wrong. But
probably, yeah.
What do you do when only half your explosions go off? Right. You know, like, all right, reset, and we'll blow up the second half.
Well, that's
of the
what
building.
I'm saying. That's definitely that's a one take. It's all or nothing because you can't blow that building up twice, you know?
Right.
Even if, like, he missed. Like, what happens if he trips or something? Like,
yeah,
you're putting a lot of stuff into that actor not messing up that one take. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so that the explosions didn't go the second part of the explosions didn't go off on time, and he kept it going, and it's actually a pretty funny scene.
It is. Like, it's a great scene, but I thought it was.
It plays into the Joker character.
It looks like it was scripted that way, right?
Yeah. No,
that's pretty cool.
I've heard that before, and then when I watched it, I saw the scene, and I was like, it is fun to see. But watch his face, watch his mannerisms, the way he moves. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. All right. That's all I got.
All right.
All righty. That's it for today. What do we got coming out on Wednesday?
All right. So we've got coming out on Wednesday, Avengers of the Wasteland, issue number 1. We already mentioned it earlier, but we have Protector number 1 and then Ravencroft number 1. So those are the big books coming out this week.
So what are those stories? I don't know those stories.
Well, Avengers of the Wasteland is spinning out of the Dead Man Logan miniseries or maxi series we talked about. This is basically set in that world with some it was Luke Cage's daughter, I believe, has got the Thor hammer, and you've got Bruce Banner's son as the Hulk. So it's basically their take on that, the Avengers of that world. I have no idea what Protector number 1 is about. To be honest with you, I couldn't tell you. And then Ravencroft number 1, again, that's been spinning out of Absolute Carnage. There's been a couple of tie-ins the last few weeks with, Sabretooth and Dracula and Carnage.
Oh,
and
okay.
This is what it's building into this mini-series that takes place in Ravencroft, the asylum there where Absolute Carnage happened.
Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. Any new indie books coming out?
Well, Protector number 1 is either Boom or Image. I can't remember which.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But I don't know the story. But yeah, that'll be the big one for the week as far as the indie books go.
We'll have to check that one out.
I'll see what I did there? That's definitely going to be one of our books next week. I guarantee that one of us will read that and we'll talk about it.
I have a feeling both of us will now.
Probably. Now that I said that.
Exactly. That's not a bad thing.
Now that I pigeonholed us into that.
Yeah. Hey, anything coming out that you guys, let us know. Actually, that'd be a great idea. Let us know anything that's coming out this week, that even if it's not a number one, because I'm looking for books that are fun. And like I said last week, something that's different, something light.
Yep.
Let us know. Yeah, let us know on Twitter at brightside_chat. You can email us at brightsidechat@gmail.com. Proud members of Nerdy Legion. Nerdylegion.com. And please. Oh, and I forgot to do it again at the beginning of the show. So you know what? I'm going to do it now.
All right.
So at Dork Podcast, they got rating bombed. I don't know what you call that. They have an awesome podcast. If anybody's listening to us, I know a lot. I know we have a lot of their listeners. Their comic fans come over to us too. But any of you that don't know what Dork Podcast is, go to their podcast and just give them a 5-star review. Somebody bombed them. I know who did it. I don't want to say who did it. It's in the professional radio game. If you're not from up here, you wouldn't know what it was. It's kind of, because the host of Dork is, he's on the radio. He's a professional radio host, Rich Keefe. Really nice guy. I've met him. You know, they do live events and I've been to his events. He's a great guy. And somebody had an axe to grind and told all of his fans to bomb him. And it's a pretty crappy thing. So
yeah.
I don't like it. And I'm, you know, that's crappy because they, that's some of these people, some people are making a living at this. We're having fun. You want to bomb us? Bomb us.
Right. Right. I'm still going to eat.
We know who our listeners are.
Yeah. I'm still going to eat next week.
Yeah.
Regardless.
No, not that Dork needs this either. The Dork Podcast doesn't, they're not getting rich doing this, but it is a pretty crappy thing to do when you see what happened to them. Cause they have, I want to say they had like 500 and something reviews and they were 5 stars across the board. Right now they have like 750 and they're at 2.5.
Yeah.
And that's crappy. That's really crappy. If we could help them out, anybody that can help them out, please just go on iTunes, look up at Dork Podcast. You'll find them. They're a great listen too. So
yeah, again, yeah, that's never the way to do things. I don't know the story behind what happened, but, and I don't listen to the podcast, but hell, I'll go rate them 5 stars just to help them
out.
It's
stupid.
Because I never believe in lifting yourself up by tearing somebody else down. I think that's a cowardly way to do things, and I have no respect for that. So
Exactly. So 100% right. All right. Enough on that, because you'll get me going. All right. Have a great week. We will see you on Thursday morning.
Take care, everyone.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Brightside Chat. We have a few sponsors who we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Brightside Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.